I don't know what the terms were, but if I know what I think they were, it was a fantastic thing for Mr. Wen Ping. And apparently Shell wanted it so bad they could taste it. For some engineering or other reasons, they wanted that free wealth. And Wen didn't own the land where the free wealth was. He had a lease on it and was operating the wells. They made a trade, and so Wen resulted in Wen owning both the surface and the mineral rights on 5 acres of land, plus a royalty interest in the, for some reason or other, in this 25-foot strip. Because last I talked to him, there was something said about, he said something about his interest in the 25-foot strip and how he acquired that, I don't know, but he just might have bought that together with when he made the change of sell. He might have bought that in fee, I don't know for sure, but and he wasn't around, or he couldn't have remembered or known back about the Progressive Club or the Progressive Oil Company originally, because he wasn't out and on his own till the early 50s. He had been with Atlantic Richfield Oil Company as an engineer, one of their top men, and left them to go out on his own. Now, he may or may not know or have documentary evidence, because his some kind of ownership or participation in that strip, that he might be able to tell me about that if he has any of the older copies of the older leases and who signed them all, because I would have known some of the names if there were signatures on there of former members of the Progressive Club, if that's what it was. As I said, a group of individuals and or even the club as a whole. I can't think of a club normally doing a thing like that, but they might have. But they might have also, this group, using my imagination, might have been allowed to use the name Progressive Oil Company because they were members of the Progressive Club. I'll ask Wen. He's back in town now. He's quite an operator. Now he sold his surface rights and some several years ago, but he still owns the mineral rights, which in the technical flood, which that is only for secondary production. He hadn't received any royalty out of there yet, and may not for a year or two or three, until they get to the point where they have produced all the primary oil that was analyzed as being in place to be produced by primary methods. When they will have produced all the numbered barrels that they calculated, then it will become secondary and he will start receiving revenue. And that goes for numerous properties around these different units.
Yeah,
Well, yes, that was really before oil, but there were Chinamen and Japanese, mostly gardeners up there, as I recall, because we had a man that built our locations where we lived in town, and old John Chinaman, so that's his Escott, and some of that was acreage could have been tenant farms on Vicksburg Alamy's Land Company properties, which had acreage up there, and I don't believe those China or Japanese in those years owned any property. Might by law have been prohibited.
Yeah, I think it was.
But that far back prohibited owning it.
Yeah. There's one case that we learned about somehow. It was on some, I think it was on the east side of the hill, there were lemon trees.
I think on the southeast slope there was.
Yeah.
I remember some trees up there, yes. I don't remember whether it was fruit trees or not, but when that first well came in, I was a junior, I think, in high school. And I had never been up and around there, only to use that old sled that we had on the north side, but I went up there after that well came in to see it. I'd never seen oil well producing, and that year I was working for Bishop Candy Company up Los Angeles, riding a red car, and it was a new experience for me. But I remember some trees, I think it was on the southeast slope.
Anyway, there was a woman who owned a bunch of those lemon trees. And oil was discovered under her land, and she made a lot of money.
Oh, yes.
Remember an operator.
I can tell you now the name of one of those landowners on the southeast slope.
Because
we were his tenants on 9th and American. He owned that property when we lived there. And it was Wilson, Salmon Wilson. And the Shell Company had the lease on his land, and that was on Temple just about north of 20th Street there, in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And Wilson, I know him quite well, see? And they already owned the property that we lived in, a little flat down on 9th, northeast corner of 9th and within American Avenue. Yes, I remember. Was it you want to take this off and let, I may have a record of,
okay.
I'll tell you about in a minute.
I forgot about him.
Well, I was telling you that I thought, in my opinion, that the rig builders, when they built the wooden rigs originally up there, were the hardest working, or at least it was the hardest work in the oil patch. So, and they were the toughest bunch of men doing that work, and sometimes real monsters at times because of the work, I guess, and temperament of a man maybe doing that kind of work. And they were all husky, strong-armed fellows. And they weren't bashful about fighting in the alley or for the drop of a hat or any offside remark or anything. And among them, I think I told you one day, as a fellow whose name at the time I couldn't remember, he wasn't a contractor as such, but as I recall, he worked for many of the rig builders. He kept busy, and he was tall, tough, and rough, and he would fight at the drop of a hat. And although sober, he was, and under normal conditions, he was quite a calm, gentle fellow. But eventually wound up as a full-round heavyweight fighter and fought, among others, with Kid Mexico. And the times I saw him was over in the Wilmington Bowl in Wilmington there. I used to follow the prize fighting of those. This were just four-round bouts originally until what year, I don't remember, the California passed a law allowing professional boxing up to 10 or 12 rounds or whatever. And he was a knockout artist. He was a left-hander. He was a southpaw. And when he swung that from the floor, he'd knock anybody out. And it occurred frequently. One time he knocked Kid Mexico out, and the reverse was the true of him. Because they both had glass jaws, but they were tough otherwise. Could land a terrific blow. But, and I remember he used to have woman trouble, and on one occasion I think he was badly wounded, at least by one of his gals putting a knife in him. But I wasn't able to determine this morning from the people at my table over there. They didn't remember him as much as I do, because I didn't know the guy. And I'll have to see if I can find an old-time rig builder. I can't remember now who's still living. It was building rigs in those days. I'm going to have to ask around. But my recollection was that he died in an escapade of that sort. But let me determine that, and I'll report to you later on.
Okay. Were there other people in the oil business who were involved in boxing? Or were most of the people in the oil business just spectators?
I don't remember specifically. Well, Kid Mexico worked at Huntington Beach, and he was an oil worker in the early days. I remember, you read one of those profiles I wrote about Onus Lindsay.
Mm-hmm.
Onus Lindsay, I mentioned Kid Mexico in there,
yeah.
And Onus Lindsay was taught to box professionally by Kid Mexico. Later, just in between that and later, Onus went on to South America. I think I described all that in there. But Kid Mexico nurtured him into a position where he could have been a professional boxer.
Did Kid Mexico have a gym or something around?
Did he what?
Did he have a gym? A place where people train?
Well, back in those days, I think that there was a gym for professional boxers down about either on Broadway or First and Locust, somewhere right in there. There was a gym in one of those buildings there. Because on my off days, I was working 24 hours and 24 hours on and off down in the harbor, bunking ships. And I used to go up there on off days and watch them work out. And I remember Kid Mexico there working out. And then when he fought at Vernon up there, he very often used Jack Doyle's gym. And that's where the arena was up there, to Jack Doyle's arena. And Kid Mexico, I saw him fight there. I didn't see him fight Leo Barlage there, but I saw him fight Bert Coleman, several of the other heavyweights. And yeah, there were workout places down on Main Street in Las Vegas. I think there was one. And then at the Wilmington Bowl, they had a gym in there. You could work out in the rain, of course. And they did some road work sometimes. Sometimes they wouldn't do anything. They'd just go there and fight. Of course, the real deluxe and the best place to train, and some of the most notable fighters used to train at Soper's Ranch up near Ojai, and we used to vacation the first 1 or 2 years we were married at Ritter's Hot Springs, was just above Soper's, and I saw Jack Dempsey working out there. In those days, the time I saw him, he was training for his fight with Jack Cherkey. Must have been in 27 or 28. It was after he had lost to Gene Tunney. He was going to come back, and he trained at Soper's Ranch. He was still married to Estelle Taylor then. She died, you know, the actress. He was very fond of her. And my youngest brother is a very good friend of Jack's, because in those days, my youngest brother was in his youth working up at Withers Ranch, and he was also managing a young lightweight fighter called Rudy Benton, I remember, who eventually became a taxi cab owner and driver. But he was a lightweight boxer, and so in his course of training, Dempsey would want speed, and he would use lightweight boxers much smaller than me, and maybe he wouldn't try to hurt him or knock him out, but he would use them for speed, to speed up his movements. And a lightweight, of course, moves faster because they are lighter, and do more footwork and run your ragged if you're too big and too clumsy. And they would hire out to Dempsey for sparring partners, lightweight sparring. Then I remember that same time he was using another middleweight and heavyweight, Racehorse Roberts was one of them. And there was some big, heavy black fellow, and I can't remember his name, was a pretty fair boxer. But anyway, there were gyms around, and that was the favorite place for some of the notable boxers that could afford it. Jackie Fields and Fidel La Barbera, way back, who were champions of one sort or another. And Jack Dempsey. Later on, Mitz was, my brother was going to New York frequently on his rag peddler business, and he used to have dinner or lunch with Dempsey at his restaurant. For years, Dempsey operated a restaurant in New York. I don't know whether he's seen him lately or not, but they were pretty good friends. For that reason, they had made contact in the early days.
What else did you do for recreation if you had 24 hours off?
What else did I do?
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't yet in a cultural mood or doing too much reading, but what did I do?
Is this the time that you went to the Y?
Yeah, I went to the
YMCA.
Well, I was still a member of the Y. I would go down there and work out, and I wasn't yet into handball though. But yeah, I was playing those leagues then on my days, nights off, and when I was available, I'd play with them or work out with them down at the Y. Yeah.
Who did you play for?
Who's that?
Some team.
The United Presbyterian Church, most of the time. That was on 5th and Atlantic. And I think mostly we played, not entirely, but we played other churches in both basketball and softball, you call it. That's what it was, softball.
What was it called?
Well, I used to call it indoor, but softball is more of a description of it. It was a larger ball, a little softer. And but we did, I think we played the Bank of Italy and several other business firms in the interleague competition. And I was never very good. I started athletics a little late because I said I couldn't afford it in high school. But I liked handball. When I got into that, I could individually get a partner and play, and maybe at my convenience or his, and in between times, or after work at noon hour or something, play 1 hour and play at the Coast Club with Lee Faust, that used to publish it, still publishes the scout sheet, I guess. He's a deceased person now, but he and I used to play each other handball. He was a member of the Coast Club. He'd alternate playing down there or at the Y. And I forget what else I did. We went to, in between times we were in 27, we were getting ready to build that place out in North Long Beach, and I think it took a little time doing that, and going out and seeing how it was coming along when it was started, and let's see, 27. Well, then I was out of working in the harbor. I worked 3 years down there. When we moved out there, I was running the hill on that Model T. We didn't even own a car until I don't know when, in the middle, early 30s, I think. We had just a one-car garage then.
Is that where you kept the one-man oil company?
Yeah. Werner had Rebecca at Model T Ford. When I was one-man oil company, I carried well oil, I told you, for 1926 Model T Ford.
You
carry a barrel of oil for it. Yeah, and she needed a car, and she was pregnant with Dorothy, my daughter, in 32, 33. And, I was still out hustling on my own, and so she needed a car, and I got this very well-conditioned 1926 Model T Ford sedan. And I don't know why we named it Rebecca, but we always named our cars, had some name for it. And Rebecca was one, and she drove that. And, I did too occasionally, but I was on that little Model A truck that I was delivering oil in. And I don't know what we did, but we sold Rebecca eventually. I saw one just like it in Horace over in Reno when I went to that collection there. Just kind of the same model. Quite a reminiscence. Seeing those cars, and that particular one brought back memories. Yeah, the oil cost me, I think, wholesale about $18 or something like that. And it wasn't a bad trade in those days.
No, I can't. Even today, I can't with
the price of things
being a lot lower. It seems like
$18
is too cheap for a car.
Well, yes, even those days. But the retail value was probably $30, $35. And that's a little more, but and that was in 1932 or 33. So by that time the car was 6 years old or so. That is where I think. I should have kept it.
Anyway, the tape is almost up.